This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga, and here is what's coming up.
Yes, it's against my culture, it's against my religion. I do not support homosexuality, but I don't feel like it should be criminalized.
That's Professor Sylvia Tamale, a lecturer at Uganda's Makerere University, on Parliament's passage of a new bill criminalizing homosexual behavior. Also, Ethiopia legislators vote to take the Tigray People's Liberation Front off the country's list of terror groups. Nigeria's two main opposition leaders seek to cancel the presidential election results. And Tanzania confirms 5 dead in a first-ever Marburg virus outbreak. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Ethiopia lawmakers have voted to remove a terrorist designation from Tigray's main political party, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, 4 months after a peace deal ended a 2-year civil war between the group and government forces. Maya Meskeo reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Ethiopian lawmakers voted in a special session Wednesday to remove the terrorist designation given to the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF. Lawmakers in the lower house approved the move by a majority vote. Out of 472 members, only 61 voted against the move and 5 abstained. The decision is the latest step in an African Union-brokered peace deal in November between Ethiopia's federal government and the TPLF that ended a 2-year civil war. Ethiopia's federal government labeled the TPLF a terrorist organization in May 2021, a few months before war broke out between forces loyal to each side. The war left thousands of people dead and displaced millions more. The peace deal saw Tigrayan forces handing over heavy weapons to the federal government, which has in turn opened aid corridors and resumed essential services to the region. As part of the deal, an interim administration has been set up in the area until elections can be held. Getachew Reda, who was picked by the TPLF to lead the interim regional administration, was one of scores of Tigrayan officials previously charged with terrorism under the designation. Ethiopian media reports say those charges are also expected to be lifted. A TPLF spokesperson was not immediately available to comment. Rights groups have accused all the warring sides, including Eritrean and regional Amhara forces, of committing war crimes during the conflict. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who was in Ethiopia in early March, on Monday condemned atrocities allegedly committed by all sides in the conflict and welcomed commitments to pursue transitional justice. The Ethiopian government rejected Blinken's statement, saying it was inflammatory and untimely. Maya Misakir for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
UN human rights experts warn that peace in northern Ethiopia's Tigray region will not be durable unless violations committed during more than 2 years of armed conflict are investigated and perpetrators held to account. The UN International Commission of Human Rights Experts on Ethiopia presented its latest report on the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva yesterday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The 3-member commission welcomed the end of hostilities between the Ethiopian government and Tigrayan People's Liberation Front. Since the peace agreement was signed, it noted a significant reduction in the fighting, which battered the lives of millions of people in Tigray, as well as the Afar and Amhara regions of northern Ethiopia. Despite these positive developments, Commission Chair Mohamed Chande Otman told the Council the gravity and scale of violations committed in Ethiopia since the war erupted in November 2020 must not be forgotten.
Our 2022 September report found reasonable grounds to believe that all parties to the conflict had committed war crimes and violation of abuses of human rights since fighting erupted in November 2020. The Commission continues to investigate these allegations in addition to alleged allegations of serious violation and abuses committed since the signing of the peace agreement.
Otman said accountability for violations is essential to bring justice to the victims and to deter future violations and abuses. The commission has documented serious offenses allegedly committed by all parties, including Eritrean forces operating on Ethiopian territory. They include attacks on civilians, sexual and gender-based violence, arbitrary detention, and violations of children's rights. Otman noted information for this report has been gathered from witnesses remotely because the Ethiopian government has refused the commission's investigation team access to the country.
We strongly urge the government to reconsider its decision not to cooperate with the commission. Under international law, the federal government has the primary responsibility to assure accountability for crimes committed during the conflict. We urge the federal government to ensure greater transparency around these efforts and stand ready to offer advice in this regard.
The Ethiopian ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva, Tsegab Kebebudaka, cautioned the commission against using inflammatory information, which he said had the potential to undermine the peace agreement. He said his government was firmly committed to investigating all cases of human rights violations and ensuring victims received redress. Reacting yesterday to the U.S. State Department's annual report on human rights violations around the world, Ethiopia's government rejected a U.S. assertion that all sides in the two-year Tigray War committed war crimes, calling the statement inflammatory. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigeria's two main opposition leaders have filed petitions seeking to cancel results from last month's disputed presidential election, beginning what could be a legal battle lasting several months. Atiku Abubakar, representing the biggest opposition party, People's Democratic Party, PDP, and Labour Party's Peter Obi, asked the appeals court to invalidate the election won by Bola Tinubu of the ruling All Progressives Congress, APC party. The opposition leaders said in separate affidavits the election was fraught with irregularities. They also accused the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, of breaching the law by failing to use electronic machines to upload polling station results, among other criticisms. Atiku and Obi asked for an order cancelling the presidential election and for the INEC to conduct a fresh vote. Tinubu has defended the election as credible. Nigeria's next president will be sworn in on May 29th. Uganda's parliament has overwhelmingly passed a new bill that critics say will further entrench abuses of gay people by banning same-sex relationships and criminalizing homosexuality. President Yoweri Museveni, who has voiced anti-gay sentiments, is considered likely to sign it into law. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
About 9 years after a court outlawed a controversial bill proposing a maximum sentence of death penalty for anyone guilty of practicing homosexuality, Uganda's parliament has passed a new bill on the matter. Legislator Asman Basalira, who introduced the proposal, says it is intended to strengthen existing laws against homosexuality, which he called a cancer.
The law we are talking about is not new. The Penal Code Act that the colonizers left in this country banned homosexuality, criminalized homosexuality. What we are trying to do is to look at the present circumstances and situations where there is now recruitment, promotion, and funding. So we want to look at this colonial law and have it in tandem with the current circumstances and situations.
The bill was supported by 73% of all legislators, including Sarah Opendi.
Even life imprisonment is not adequate because this person is going to go into the prisons and continue living his life, maybe even continuing with homosexuality in the prisons. These people should be castrated. Yes.
This comes amid reports of growing concerns about homosexuality in schools, but a section of society, especially human rights activists, call it an infringement on human rights. Adrian Juko is the executive director of Human Rights Awareness and Promotion Forum.
Now, aggravated homosexuality is an interesting offense because repeating touching two times is basically aggravated homosexuality. Saying I'm lesbian or I'm gay twice and I'm convicted is aggravated homosexuality. As soon as I'm arrested for any of these offenses, I'm supposed to be subjected to an HIV test, mandatory. And what does this mean? Already there's a presumption that since someone is HIV positive, then they are guilty of an offense automatically or aggravated homosexuality, even if there's no sex involved. Because homosexuality is not just sex, it's far more than sex.
Professor Sylvia Tamale, a Makerere University lecturer, described passage of the bill as a sad moment for human rights defenders. She wondered if the country needed a new law to criminalize homosexuality.
If you feel you've been raped
by homosexual, there's a law for that. If for sex against a minor, there's a law for that. So I am not happy at all about how far it is going. Yes, it's against my culture, it's against my religion. I do not support homosexuality, but I don't feel like it should be criminalized.
Gay rights activist Frank Mugisha is worried.
Some members of parliament have radicalized Ugandans and indoctrinated them that homosexuals are after your children. They're here to take away the African values. This is something coming from the West. So it feels like some big monster is coming. And if you don't fight it, already we've been seeing people getting violated. We've registered so many cases of violations. Issues of trauma and mental health is on the increase in the LGBTQ community. We've seen so many cases of arrest, blackmail and extortion. So this is going to go on the increase.
The legislation proposes penalties that include 2 to 10 years in prison for people who publicly declare they belong to the LGBTQ community or engage in homosexuality, attempted homosexuality, aiding and abetting homosexuality, or conspiracy to commit homosexuality, and 20 years for aggravated homosexuality. Museveni has assured the public that Uganda will not embrace homosexuality. According to the United Nations, Uganda is among 77 countries that criminalize homosexual practices. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Charles Mwanguhia Mpagi is a political analyst and TV host. He says this is not the first time that such a law has been passed by the Ugandan parliament, and that although human rights groups have condemned the law, there seems to be support among the public.
The condemnation coming from human rights activists is looking at the broad brush with which the anti-homosexuality campaigners have approached what they think is a new threat. But for Uganda's particular context, you need to take it back to maybe 12, 13 years ago when we had then Member of Parliament, he's still Member of Parliament, David Bahati, sponsoring a private member's bill that ended up getting passed in Parliament as a bill. It was assented to by the President and enacted into law, but then shortly after was shot down by the Constitutional Court because it was apparently passed without quorum in Parliament. The people who went to court in 2014 went to court to challenge what appeared to them then, and very many people looked at, a very draconian provision or section of the law. And then the other interpretation was that actually there was no need to create a new law to target homosexuality or gay activity, because in the first place, homosexuality is already illegal. The other areas that the law purported to target then and now are also things that are prohibited already by the laws existing in Uganda. So the question is, do you really need a new law? Has the threat of homosexuality grown so much? Is there active promotion, as the accusations are, with a very, very broad brush approach that is being employed? Is it likely to sweep in other people that should otherwise be innocent and become a bigger threat to enjoyment of some basic fundamental rights and freedoms in the country as enshrined in the Constitution? Those are the questions I think that emerge.
As you mentioned that a similar law was struck down by the court in 2014, do you think this one would stand scrutiny by the court?
The hysterical response now, you can't gauge how the courts of law would react to it. Any people trying to challenge this would be to look carefully at what angle to tackle it from a legal challenge perspective. The challengers in 2014 looked at the quorum that passed it, so never went into the merit for constitutionality or lack of constitutionality of the proposals in that act as it then was. The new one, then any challenge to it would have to look carefully and weigh the popular sentiment across the country, both among religious institutions, legislators, conservative groups, and others, to find what would be weak points to challenge it. Yes, like you said, the proposed sanction seem to be slightly lighter than the previous ones, but who does it target is the bigger question.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. This year's theme of World Water Day is about accelerating change to deal with a growing challenge around the globe. For instance, in Kenya, extreme drought conditions have exacerbated the impact of climate change on people's rights to water and sanitation. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports for VOA.
Like its neighbors in the Horn of Africa, Kenya is experiencing extreme drought conditions, causing tremendous suffering for millions. Peter Karanja is a technical lead for the Water, Sanitation and Hygiene Program at World Vision Kenya, a Christian charity and humanitarian organization.
The drought situation in Kenya currently is one of the worst that has happened in the last 3 drought season within a decade. And this reflects squarely on how climate change is negatively impacting the issue of water access. Meaning if we remain and do things as usual, the situation looks like it will worsen as we progress. At the moment, close to 12 counties are in crisis in terms of water access.
In Kenya, 3.5 million people are projected to be food and water insecure, according to the United Nations. Karanja, who spoke on a local TV station, gave more details.
And the issue of drought is not only affecting people in terms of water, but inclusive of their livelihood and their lifestyle. What development hope is being put in place so that these people can economically empower themselves, they can quench the thirst, and the children can improve on their health. The most vulnerable population are the children under 5. The issue of malnutrition affects mostly the children. Waterborne diseases majorly affects the children. People are walking so far to get this water.
The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says climate change is disrupting weather patterns, leading to extreme weather events, worsening water scarcity, and contaminating water supplies. Today's World Water Day is about accelerating change to solve the water and sanitation crisis. And because water affects us all, everyone needs to take action. Susan Kokimutua is a public health officer at the Department of Public Health in the Ministry of Health.
We are ensuring that in healthcare facilities, sanitation is top-notch. In schools also, we have a program for washing schools where we make sure that the children in schools, they have adequate wash facilities. And these children also happen to be our ambassadors in their homes. So there is that training that is given because children and giving out the messages, they are perfect. When we enable them in school, they are able to take that message home. And at the same time, in the homes, the homes are also improved.
However, the Kenyan health official gave insights on the challenges in addressing the crisis.
The main challenge is the finance that goes to wash activities. That is the biggest challenge because, of course, preventive activities, not just in Kenya, but in the world over, they tend to take the back burner. We are interested in what we are seeing, instant results, and something that we can actually take and run away with. Issues of wash, we feel the effects much, much later. If it's a positive outcome, it will be felt downstream, not immediately.
Held on 22nd March every year since 1993, World Water Day draws attention to the 2 billion people who live without access to safe drinking water. It coincides with the 3-day UN Water Conference in New York. UN officials called it a once-in-a-generation moment for the world to unite around water. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
The Basketball Africa League 2023 ended the Sahara Conference in Dakar ended yesterday, and for that I'm joined by my colleague host of the Sunny Side of Sports. I welcome to the show, Sunny.
Sporty greetings, Douglas.
So let's have some highlights. So the conference ended yesterday in Dakar. What did you pick up?
Well, Douglas, I think overall the conference proved to be very competitive. We had five teams that all ended with the same record, 3 wins and 2 losses. And they had to go to a point differential in the games the teams played against each other to determine the final lineup. But the teams going through to the BAL playoffs in May in Kigali, Rwanda, are Stade Malien. They're from Mali. AS Douan, they're the hometown team. They're based in Dakar. Rwanda Energy Group, ABC Fighters. Those are the four teams. The Fighters are from Ivory Coast. Big surprise, Monastir, the defending BAL champion. They did not make it to the playoffs. Even though they had the same record, their point differential was the lowest. So they were eliminated basically by Douan on Tuesday. The score in that game was 76-60 in favor of Douan.
Well, it's a surprise. Many people were surprised by the failure by Monastir to qualify. They have been champions last year. They went to the finals the other year. What happened, do you think?
I actually had picked Monastir to dominate this conference, Douglas. So that was a big surprise for me. Their head coach was quoted after the loss to Douan on Tuesday saying that they deserve to lose the game. The better team won, and he actually didn't seem too disappointed, but a big surprise that the defending champion is out of the competition.
Now, all eyes set on the Nile Conference in Kigali, April 26th.
They're going to take a break of about a little over a month, and then the Nile Conference games will be played in Cairo, Egypt. The hometown team in that tournament, Douglas, is Al Ahly. Of course, they're one of the powerhouses in African club football, and they also have a basketball team. They're going to be making their debut in the Basketball Africa League. The five other teams in the Nile Conference are the Cape Town Tigers from South Africa, City Oilers from Uganda. We mentioned those, the Oilers, yesterday. They're also a debutante team from Uganda. Ferroviario de Beira from Mozambique. Petro de Luanda, a finalist in 2022. One of the favorites, I think, now to lift the trophy, Douglas. Very proud Angolan team. And Seydou Legacy Athletic Club from Guinea, also called SLAC. So that should be interesting. If I had to make an early prediction for that conference, I'd have to go with Petro de Luanda.
Petro de Luanda, I'm talking of predictions. From Dakar to Cairo to Kigali, whom do you see getting to the finals?
Well, I'll go with Petro to make it to the final again. And I think they're going to win it this year, this time around. They've they have experience, and I know they really want to win the trophy during the 2023 season, but you know, they've got some interesting teams. Maybe Al Ahly can pull off a surprise on their home court in Cairo.
Yeah, if it was soccer, I would say soccer is soccer. Thanks very much, Sunny. And that wraps up this edition of this African News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7. Visit our website at voafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yebro, and our engineer tonight, Helen Kudiani, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.